to get a better picture of what's going on the streets of Gaza in the aftermath of the Israeli aggression and also in the wake of the ceasefire. We're joined by our correspondent Hala Al-Safadi from Gaza to tell us more. Hala, what do you have for us?
Gaza's morning today is very special and very different. It's totally different than the past 8 days they have been going through. People are in the streets, life is back to normal. Many people actually went to their work. The schools are back on Saturday. As you can see, the streets, cars are in the streets, people are walking, finally, you can see a smile on their faces. However, the families of those 162 who were killed and the other 1,222 who were injured are still in the hospitals, are still not over what happened to their families. Many families, as we know, have lost a lot of members of their families. Houses were destroyed. So although there is this big part of happiness and people are enjoying the truce and the ceasefire, but the other side of Palestinians are homeless right now. Do not have a home or a shelter at the moment, and many of them are just staying at neighbors or even staying at the hospital until they find another place to go to.
And for more insight on the story, we're now joined by political analyst Mr. Kamal Wazni, who's joining us by satellite from the Lebanese capital, Beirut. Mr. Kamal Wazni, welcome to the program. Before we get to the political repercussions of the ceasefire for the Israelis, tell us about the guarantees that exist for the Israelis upholding the ceasefire. Every time that a ceasefire had been brokered by Egypt, the Israelis were always the ones that violated the agreements.
Well, obviously, the guarantee today is the resistance. And the resistance is the only guarantee because this is the language that the Israeli understand. After the war of 2008 and 2006, I think the resistance were very strong on their preparation and their readiness. And they told the Israeli, if you attack us and if you break that truce, then the resistance will be ready to actually retaliate and defend itself. Obviously, the situation of 2006, there are resistance in Lebanon. They have more strengths because they have the borders and the support from from Syria and from Iran, and were able to support them. The situation in Gaza was more difficult because Gaza is still under blockade. Hopefully it had left it that blockade. But the resistance is the answer to guarantee anything. And anyone who think that a guarantee can come from the United States or from the new Egyptian president or from the Emir of Qatar or any other political entity would be mistaken. Today we've seen a victory for the work of those people who believed in the resistance. And yesterday we saw how some people within the Palestinian leadership thanks the Iran and how it's helped prepare the resistance to defend itself. And I think the answer is resistance, and resistance, and all these political back deal is actually could be a conspiracy against the Palestinian to continue the fight on to liberate all Palestine, because Gaza is the smallest part of the whole Palestine.
Hala Al-Safadi, our guest in Beirut, says that resistance played a major and key role in assuring that this ceasefire will sustain. Tell us, how do the Gazans feel about the importance of the Hamas resistance, their capacity and capability to fire retaliatory missiles into Israel in response to the aggression by the Israelis?
The only answer for any Gazan right now against all the attacks is resistance. If you talk to an average Gazan, he would say that we did not take anything out of peace negotiations or any kind of negotiations. whether with Israel or with any other Arab leaders involved in those negotiations. And the only thing that actually had stopped this aggression or this offensive against Gaza was the resistance, because till day 8 we heard many leaders talk and many people condemning and deploring, but we did not see anything on the ground. So the only thing that actually helped is the resistance, and this is something now all Gazans, mostly all Gazans, believe in it. And when we talk, even when Gazans now talk among each other, you find them saying, yes, viva resistance. You find them saying that finally we know that someone got our back. They're so proud of what they reach, and they're so proud of the Qassam military group right now. Now, Gazans feel that we don't need other countries to just stand and talk and just feel sorry for what's happening in Gaza. They're saying that the entire countries or all other Arab countries should learn that the small besieged Gaza is not even an independent country till now. We were able to stand in the face of Israel. So they're thinking that the other countries should take Gaza as a role model and follow what they did. Israel, the undefeated Israel, this stereotype we had in mind, finally Gazans had destroyed it, and finally Gazans had proved that with your resistance and with even if you don't have the same technology and weapons like Israel, but we still knew how to get in there, and we knew how to reach Jerusalem al-Quds, and we knew how to reach Tel Aviv. Many Gazans, just walking in the streets and listening to them, it was really interesting. Many of them are talking about Iran and how they said, yes, they did not send Fajr 5 rockets to Gaza, but they gave them the techniques and the secrets of those rockets. They're so proud. They even quote a Chinese proverb that says, don't give me a fish, but teach me how to fish. They're saying that this is what Iran did with Gazans. They did not give them the rockets, did not send them the rockets, but they actually give them the secrets of defending themselves whenever needed without going back to any country and asking for help. So yes, they think that resistance and resistance is only the key to answer all the Palestinian problems, because in West Bank, Abbas have been negotiating for so long and did not get anything, but only after 8 days of resistance in Gaza, Gazans and the resistance have proved themselves to be way more better than any kind of negotiation with the Israelis.
Definitely the theme of these 8 days was resistance. In fact, back to our guest Kamal Wazni in Beirut. Mr. Wazni, the Israeli Prime Minister has now come under fire for agreeing to a ceasefire with Palestinian groups. Kadima Chairman Shaul Mofaz has said that the Palestinian resistance movement, Hamas, in fact, has the upper hand in the conflict. What are the political repercussions for Benjamin Netanyahu, given the looming Knesset elections coming up in 2 months?
Well, I think it's very true that the resistance has the upper hand and exposed the true weakness of the Israeli. For a very long time, the Israeli, they sounded very tough, but when it came to a battle between the people in Gaza and the Israeli, it shows how vulnerable are these largest military power in the Middle East, that is backed by the United States, is backed by the Western power, backed by France. We heard all these ridiculous statements from the French government. But in the end, what is right is right. And the people who on the side of rightness and justice will always, they have a place in history. And those people who come and occupied other people's land, even all the mighty power of the United States did not make him safe. Today, I think the repercussion is going to be tremendous on Mr. Netanyahu. The Israeli love to stab each other, and I think it's going to come to the end, the election, which is going to be in January. But in the end, I think the rhetoric of Mr. Netanyahu and all this red line and putting pressure on the American and putting pressure that I'm going to attack this country and I'm going to attack this country, and if you don't stop me, I'll do it. Today, he couldn't find a little battle against Gaza, so I think he's going to come under a barrage of attack, and those people who are attacking him, they're right. What could I say? He exposed the weakness of Israel. He jeopardized the stability of what's supposed to be the strongest country in the Middle East. And now these are lessons, the resistance in Lebanon and other resistance in the world. They really will, in the few coming weeks, they will study every aspect of this military escalation or confrontation, and they will in due days, you know, this will be beneficial, because you have to remember that we still have in Lebanon occupied land, and I think the resistance in Lebanon will not be silent at the right time and at the right place to reclaim what is supposed to be Lebanese territory. And I think the Palestinian, they should not be celebrating as they should be, but they should be, on the other hand, preparing for the next confrontation with Israel, because this is my message to all the leadership of Hamas. Continue believing on the path of resistance. Support and stand with those countries who supported you all through a difficult time, who believed in you when you nobody actually helped you from the Arab countries, which they've been given lip service. If you want to liberate Palestine, continue preparation for the war that actually gives the Palestinians their right to go back to their homeland. And Gaza is the beginning, but it's still the largest Palestine still under occupation. It's time to celebrate for a little while, but preparation should continue, because this enemy is very, very dangerous, and has the American behind him, as we saw how the American came and bailed him out from what could be a major disaster if he continue with the ground operation. Could have been a disaster for him. I think the American saved him once again after they saved him in 2006 when they launched their attack against Lebanon. And those statesmen are documented in 2006 in the autobiography of Bush, when he said, "We stopped, we made that ceasefire or cessation of hostility just to save the Israeli."
Halal Safadi, beneath the celebrations for the victory of the resistance still lies the terrifying scope of human rights abuse that the international community has seemed to ignore. And that's the fact that the people of Gaza are enduring a crushing blockade since 2007. That makes daily life intolerable for them. They're deprived of building materials, food, medical equipment, logistics, medicine, leaving the territory to be described sometimes as an open-air prison. Still, the situation is quite dire for the people of Gaza.
Definitely, the situation is very it's dire for the people in Gaza. But despite this, they're still celebrating. Despite this, they still want to show to send a message to the entire to all the world, or the entire world, that they can do it. Despite the fact that we did not hear any human rights organization talking about the situation in Gaza, maybe we heard many of them on the Israeli side saying, yes, Israel has all the right to defend themselves against the rockets launching towards Israel, but we did not hear many of them coming here in Gaza and saying anything to in the side of Gazans. But still, Gazans did not care about this, because I think that Gaza reached a stage where they don't really care for what people think anymore. They don't really care for what people had to say or what people had to comment. We're living in a blockaded strip. It's only 365 kilometers square, with 1.7 million people living in this strip. It is, it's like you said, it's a prison for most of the time here. But, and we maybe we don't have all the medical supplies and the medical equipment needed, but I can assure you that Gazans are doing their best here to survive. Gazans might be already have been already going through a lot, and this offensive only deepened the amount of suffering people in Gaza are living in. But they still insist to keep going, and they still think that no human rights organization is going to get the rights. Human rights are only made for America and Israel and the similar countries, but human rights organizations were not meant to care about the victims, since they only care about the victimizers. And this is how 2012 is turning out to be. The years, all those centuries are only talking and defending the victimizers and totally forgot about the victims who are until now suffering in the hospitals. Until the moment, if I go to Al-Shifa Hospital, I'm definite that many doctors are going to complain about the medical equipment. Yes, it's a victory we're living right now, but let's not forget or ignore the people who are in deep need for support right now, the people who need medication right now. Maybe if the Rafah border is open to all of them, many of those 1,222 injuries would be able to get to Egypt, at least, to get medication, especially that, as we mentioned earlier, the weapons Israel is using is all unconventional, and many of them, the doctors are failing to deal with the kind of injuries. So if they were, at least after this victory, move a little bit, do anything to help those who are in hospitals. We already have 162 people who are killed. We really don't want to risk the 1,222, because any minute, any of those people can die since they are critically injured. So, yes, we are living in a besieged strip. We're living in the blockaded coastal enclave, but we're still determined to keep going. And we don't really care about what the human rights organizations are saying, because they never had a word from the beginning. So we don't expect anyone to do anything right now. But maybe the Arab leaders and maybe the Arab countries, after seeing that you can do it and you can actually slap Israel on the face, maybe they would move a little bit and help those who are in the hospitals right now in Gaza.
Kamal Wazni, our guest in Beirut. My next question is regarding the regional stance from Arab countries, and also extending all the way to the United Nations and international community. Can't there be a push to end the blockade on the Gaza Strip, open the crossings fully? Can't Arab countries and Egypt, in addition, do something to end the five-year blockade on Gaza?
Well, this is a test now to the leadership of the new Islamic, what's supposed to be Islamic country that emerged after the Arab Spring. Are they committing to the liberation of Palestine? Are they willing to put their stance and face the mighty, what's supposed to be the pressure of the United States, and or they cannot be business as usual, just be submissive to the will of the United States. We have to wait and assess. I think so far we haven't seen a major change in the whole picture, except arranging for this truce. This truce is not enough by itself. The Palestinians need support, and all kind of support, material support, economic support, and we have to like the Qatari and the Saudis, they paid a lot of money to ship weapons against Syria. I think it's better off to ship weapons against Israel if they want to stand in history that the one who can liberate the Masjid al-Aqsa or the Mosque of the Dome. I think it's better to put their resources in a good cause which unify the Islamic and the Arab world. My estimates, we have to wait to see what the emerging leadership in Egypt, how much they can stand what is supposed to be right. We know their position before they came to power. At this point, we have to wait and see. We're not gonna judge or prejudge. I think we should give him the benefit of the doubt, but that time should not be long. The people of Gaza have been suffering for a very long time. The Palestinians been under occupation for a very long time. They've been cut from the rest of the world. They don't have basic medicine because the Israeli ration, even the kind of food they eat in Gaza. I think it's time to be decisive, to be to take a position for what is supposed to be right, and I think for the Palestinian and the leadership of the Palestinian should be mindful of the changes, and don't ally yourself with the long part of the equation. You'll be making a miscalculation. This victory happened because people believed in the resistance, and they armed the resistance, and they trained the resistance when everybody was putting a blockade against the resistance. If you lose that card, I think you'll be weak in your resistance and you make yourself vulnerable to that change that is taking place. And you give the Israeli an opportunity to attack you again.
Okay, one last question for our correspondent, Hala Al-Safadi in Gaza. Hala, under the deal, Israel has also agreed to open all crossings and facilitate the movement of people and goods in and out of the Gaza Strip. Do you have any information as to when the border crossings will open?
As the terms I read, they said 24 hours after having this ceasefire in effect, the terms should take place. So, as they said, 24 hours, we should see all the borders open to Gaza. However, there is something that was they were not really on the same page. From the Gazan side, they said that this ceasefire means that all borders will be opened and the siege on Gaza will be lifted. However, on the Israeli side, they commented on those terms and they said that ending this war does not mean lifting the siege on Gaza. And this special sentence, or this one sentence, makes a huge difference. And this sentence led many Gazans to think that we might stop this war, but they also think that it will continue because Israel is not going to stick to the terms that are mentioned in this ceasefire, especially that after only a few hours of those terms, Israel stood up and said, yes, but this does not mean lifting the siege on Gaza. And here there's a huge question mark from Gazans on those terms, and a huge question mark saying what is next if they're not going to open the borders and lift the siege on Gaza.
All right, many thanks. Hala Al-Safadi, Press TV's correspondent from Gaza, and also thanks to our guest political analyst, Mr. Kamal Wazni, joining us from Beirut.